Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in Union City, New Jersey, this is Talk on the Hudson, and I am Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 10th of May, 2017. I want to thank you again for listening from wherever you are here in the good old U.S. of A. You can always write to the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, by writing to talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Once again, talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando and on Twitter @theGloriousFUJ. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Talking the Hudson and, of course, like it. And I ask you to tell your friends to do the same. Now, this week's edition, ladies and gentlemen, of Talking the Hudson is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant. Now, it's a brand new gem in Hudson County. It is indeed the best Italian food you will taste there. Now, Olivella Restaurant is located conveniently at 7709 Bergen Line Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. They're open for dinner 7 days a week, and the food is delicious. It's fresh. It's just so well made. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, for all of us who are trying to get summer ready, it's difficult if you go to Olivella, but it's so worth it. Trust me. If you have to cheat for a day on your meals, go to Olivella Restaurant, folks. It's absolutely wonderful. And make sure you call them to make a reservation at 201-662-6110. Once again, 201-662-6110. I strongly recommend you make a reservation before you go to Olivella Restaurant. Check out their website, www.olivellanj.com. Once again, www.olivellanj.com. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on both Instagram and Twitter. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear from you tonight, so don't be shy and call me toll-free at 657-383-0296. Once again, 657-383-0296, our toll-free number brought to you by Olivella Restaurant. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to have you join me tonight here on Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, it is May, and hopefully these warm days are ahead of us, and the cold ones are in our rearview mirror, I hope. So hopefully we'll be a lot warmer sooner than later. And tonight, as always, we start with the real truth. Folks, it is indeed Teacher Appreciation Week. I know I talked about it a little bit last week, but I want to sort of delve into it a little bit more. And for those of you that are not aware, I am an educator. I teach in academia. I'm a scholar. Now, while I'm not a teacher, like many friends of mine that I know that teach at the high school level, middle school, or even elementary level, at the end of the day, I'm an educator. And let me tell you, I'm extremely proud of it. And sure, my job's a little easier than most of my colleagues, as I mentioned before, who work at the lower levels. But at the end of the day, we're all teachers. And sure, you know, listen, I sometimes get annoyed when many of my peers in academia don't like being referred to as teachers, and they sort of make a big stink about it. I mean, honestly, let's just stop with the semantics. Seriously, we're teaching. We're educating. It's that simple. So, you know, tonight, as we celebrate this week from May 8th, of course, up until Friday, May the 12th, always appreciate our teachers, folks. And I'll tell you something, because for me, it's you know, teachers make a big difference in our lives. They really, really do. And I can tell you from someone who was probably one of the biggest class clowns you'll ever meet in school, going back to my elementary school days, throughout middle school and high school, even college days, actually grateful too. I was one of those guys that enjoyed being a clown, you know? And the last person you'd ever think about being a teacher or working in education was yours truly. But you know what? It was the best career decision I ever made. And sure, I worked in the state of New Jersey prior to my career in academia. And yes, I enjoyed working for the judiciary as a probation officer, and then consequently working as a criminal investigator, public defender, very reputable agencies within the state of New Jersey. I can't say the same for a lot of the management that I used to deal with, because they weren't very reputable, but, you know, that's another day. But the fact is that while I enjoyed working for the state, the best that I've ever had in my lifetime was teaching and teaching college and working with young adults and teaching material that, again, is a challenge sometimes. Whether it's been on social media, whether it's been on my Instagram, whether it's been on my Facebook or on Twitter, you know, I've made a point to thank teachers and to remind everyone to always thank a teacher. They're the people who work just relentless hours, sometimes for compensation, that they're well underpaid. At the end of the day, folks, they make a huge difference in our lives. You know, I'm sure we could all think about teachers that made a difference for us. I can say right now, for me, going back to my high school days, the first teacher that comes to mind, Frank Augustine. I know he's retired now. I don't know if he's listening, but for any of my Memorial High School alumni, and you know Frank, tell him I always think about him because he made a profound impact on me. He motivated me to actually want to go to college. Because I really didn't want to go to college. I wasn't, you know, growing up in high school. And sometimes school was very boring to me. But Frank Augustine was just one of those guys that was inspiring and just knew how to motivate me. And said, Fernando, you're a bright kid. It'd be criminal for you not to go. Try it out. Maybe you don't like school, but you know what? It was the best decision I ever made. And let me tell you, it's not just Frank Augustine, but so many great teachers that I had growing up, even during my high school years. Ray Iacovelli, who has since passed, who was a tremendous teacher, tremendous influence on me. I mean, I never used to care about medieval literature or even reading about Shakespeare. But I know my senior year of high school, God rest his soul, Ray Iacovelli made a point that all of us become invested in the immortal bard and in history's greatest writer, arguably William Shakespeare. And I'm always going to be grateful to him. And I always think about him. Whether it's Lou Marchesani, who was my biology and anatomy physiology teacher at Memorial High School in West New York, New Jersey, who has also since passed. And I remember that it's been over 20 years since his passing, but you know, I always think about him because he really left an indelible mark on my life. And he really knew when to, you know, shake me up and just tell me, Fernando, snap out of it, get to work, do what you're supposed to do, and you're going to do great things. And, you know, I wish Lou was around today. And I wish Ray were around today to see some of the things I've accomplished since then, you know, and it's really owed to you guys, because teachers like yourselves made it possible. Teachers like you inspired me to be better. And we all have that, folks. And tonight, you know, I hope that while you're listening to tonight's broadcast, I hope you just take a moment. And if you are still in contact with any teachers, do me a favor. Make it a point. Shoot them an email. Give them a phone call. Just get in contact with them. Tell them how much you appreciate what they did for you. Because I know for a fact, when I think of my teachers, they did so much for me. And you know, I would take up hours and hours on this program, which I don't want to do, naming every single teacher that had a profound impact on me. But I'm some of the few that I can think of that were really just profound instructors in my life. And then, of course, you know, I had professors in college who were great. I had professors in grad school that were amazing. And listen, like any profession, there are some bad apples. Were there some really stuff that I had at Memorial High School? Absolutely. I'm not going to name them because I really don't want to embarrass them, but you know who they are, and I think they still know who I am and they know I exist. But the point is that there were still, you know, while there's still a lot of bad, just like there are bad doctors and bad lawyers and bad computers or bad secretaries. There's just, listen, there are battles in every profession. And by and large, when you get into any profession, you do it because you want to, you do it because it matters to you. And when I think of teachers at any level, you do it because they love it. You know, you don't get into this profession, folks, to make millions of dollars, okay? You get into this profession like you do when you get into finance or equities or, you know, business or trading or, you know, any or securities or any of those things, you know, when you're making six figures consistently in the high six figures for many, many years. I mean, teachers are grossly underpaid, not just in New Jersey, but throughout the country. And what they do each and every day to come deal with students sometimes that don't come from the best areas, don't come from the best homes, but they do the best job they can. I can tell you that here in Hudson County, I've gotten to know a lot of teachers over the years, whether it's at my alma mater, Memorial High School, by the way, go Tigers, or other teachers in the area, or teachers I've come to know in my lifetime. You know, we all work hard. We all do our part to make our students' lives better. And this week, during Teacher Appreciation Week, I ask all of you tonight to please take a moment, thank each and every teacher that you possibly can, because they do make a difference in the lives, you know, just, you know, our kids, but for future generations to come. And I hope that we all remember that again this week as we're supposed to be honoring teachers. And I just don't think it's this week in May. We should do it each and every day of the year because they deserve it. And like I said, it's a shame what happens in school districts, not just here in Hudson County, but throughout New Jersey and the United States, whether it's, you know, and I'll get to what's going on in Bayonne, New Jersey in a few moments, but we know that teachers are grossly underpaid, districts are underfunded, and quite frankly, it's an outrage. It's a travesty, and this shouldn't happen. But you know what, until parents and taxpayers and even our elected officials demand action, we're not going to get anywhere, and we need to. And that's the real truth. Once again, folks, again, feel free to call in tonight, 657-383-0296. Once again, 657-383-0296, because I want to hear from you and what's on your mind about Hudson County. And, you know, our toll-free number is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant in Northern New Jersey. All right, folks, I want to sort of get into some local issues here. I do have a guest coming on in about 15 minutes or so. I'm hoping to have here on the program Jersey City mayoral candidate Bill Matsakoutis on, and he'll join us for a good portion here at the bottom of the hour here, here on Talk on the Hudson. So I'm eagerly awaiting his appearance on the show coming up here at the bottom of the hour. So stay tuned, folks. Don't go anywhere. And you know, listen, I sort of want to start off in a sort of a segue again from my opening monologue here today. And again, we are celebrating Teacher Appreciation Week. And let me tell you, for any of you Facebook subscribers, if you have the chance, check out the Facebook page for Talk on the Hudson, which is www.facebook.com/Talk on the Hudson. And I had a real opportunity, and it was a treat actually, to sit down with Danielle Miller, such a sweetheart, really, really great woman, who happens to be the director of drama club at Hoboken High School. And let me tell you, it was just, it was a great sit down. Again, if you haven't had a chance to check it out on the page, please do so. I did upload the interview. It's a good maybe 10 minutes long. It's really informative, and I can tell you that when I think about Teacher Appreciation Week, I think of great teachers like Danielle, who I got to know yesterday. I've gotten to talk a little bit leading up to the sit-down, and of course, you know, just the multitude of other teachers I know throughout the area that just go to school every day, and, you know, it's something that really, really resonated with me yesterday. I sat down with her, and we had a really good conversation on camera, and again, if you haven't had a chance, check it out on the Facebook page, because it's a great, great interview. And, you know, when I sat there yesterday and we were talking a little bit about not just what it's like to work in an urban high school like Hoboken High School and to teach drama and to work with different age groups, especially at the high school, it just sort of reminded me about how important the arts are. And listen, it's very interesting because I think like anything else in life, we sometimes we evolve with our thought process. We evolve with our thinking. And there was probably a time in my life, I would say in my late teens, early 20s, where I didn't really care about the arts. I didn't care about theater. I didn't care about museums. I didn't care about how important it was to have drama clubs in high schools and why it was important to make sure that the school play was well-funded. And you know what? When I was younger, I didn't really care about that. And I can tell you that, thankfully, as I got older and I went to college and I finished my undergraduate degrees and then I went to graduate school, I made a point to appreciate the arts and to appreciate going to see plays and going to see, you know, some musicals. I haven't seen a musical in a while, but going to see plays and going to museums and appreciating the arts and really how well-rounded of an experience it is and how it helps our kids. And, you know, yesterday when I got to sit down with Danielle Miller again from Hoboken High School, it was just a great segment. And I sat there and I thought about really the impact that the arts have on our community and our youth and how it really helps shape kids at all ages. And one of the things that stood out for me during the interview yesterday with Ms. Miller was talking about the fact of how easy it is for government, whether it's local, state, or even federal, to cut funding for the arts. You know, it's something that isn't easily, you know, testable, for example. It's not like you can test math and English or the sciences, for example. More times than not, that seems to be the rhetoric that is wasted. You know, oh, you can't really test the arts. You know, they really make you a well-rounded student. They really help you. And I can tell you from years of just going to plays and going to museums and just enjoying the arts, it's you know what? It's really illuminating. And, you know, one of my favorites here is here in Hudson County. Later, I know in June they'll be having it, and then I know they also have it in the fall. Hoboken Arts and Crafts Festival, that is probably one of the best things you can do during the summer months and even in the fall. here in Hudson County. I thoroughly enjoy just going to Hoboken, walking up and down Washington Street because they close it down for, I think, maybe a stretch of like 6 to 7 blocks. And let me tell you, what you see there is unbelievable. Whether it's the crafts, the great artists that are there, or just a lot of the artwork from local painters and artists that exhibit their work there for everybody walking by. I mean, it's so enriching. And it's something that, you know, yesterday when I was sitting there with Danielle Miller from Hoboken High School, it just reminded me how important the arts are and how we should never try to undermine it at all. And listen, you know, I'm not trying to get out of here because those of you that know me know that I'm a very middle-of-the-road guy. I'm a registered independent. I don't really take sides. But, you know, one of the things that maybe either seems too progressive for people in terms of a viewpoint or position is making sure that the arts are funded. You know, I remember as a kid growing up at public school number 6 in Western New York, Harry L. Bain School, I remember being in the school play. I remember I was the lead as the Easter Bunny, I believe, in the 4th or 5th grade, if I'm not mistaken. I took a picture of the Easter Bunny. It was really funny. But the point is that, you know, I enjoyed it. Even though I was nervous about auditioning for the role of the Easter Bunny and doing that, I always supported friends of mine that were in the arts. I have plenty of friends that do that. You know, one of my dearest friends, who I know listens to the program, actually, I'm glad that he does, you know, Mr. DeWitt Fleming. And a shout out to him up in Spanish Harlem across the river in New York City. You know, one of the things that, you know, as I became friends with him, was appreciating all types of arts. And, you know, he's an accomplished tap dancer. He's an accomplished musician. But even before I met DeWitt and my buddy Jared Grimes also too, you know, shout out to Jared there, big NBA fan like me, who also likes the program, and I appreciate you guys listening. You know, whether it's been them or previous other artists that I've gotten to know over the years, let me tell you, it's really enlightening. You know, when I sat down yesterday with Ms. Miller and talked about, you know, what the arts mean and why they're so important and why, you know, they do their best, you know, make a difference in the impact of children. It really does make an impact. And like I said, again, you have to watch the segment on the page. Again, for all you Facebook subscribers, facebook.com/talkingthehudson was a really informative interview with Miss Miller. But, you know, she's really just sort of like a microcosm of just a bigger dynamic here about how many dedicated teachers we see like Danielle Miller from Hoboken High School and how many dedicated teachers I see, you know, even here in Hudson County, even in my old stopping grounds, Memorial High School. I have a dear friend of mine, Mr. Scott Olrab, who's currently the principal of Memorial High School. Man, I don't remember ever seeing as dedicated an administrator in my lifetime as Scott Olrab, the principal of Memorial High School. I mean, it's people like him and other great teachers there in that school district, the great teachers here in Union City. My my dear friend, Alfredo Garcia, great teacher here in the Union City school system. I know plenty of great teachers in Weehawken. I have teachers in North Bergen, of course. But all in all, we're all in the struggle together. And, you know, today again, thinking about what Teacher Appreciation Week means, it's, I'll tell you, it leaves a very, very big impact on all of us. And I think we should think about that. And of course, you know, just sort of going back to the great thing I did concerning the drama club at Hoboken High School, you know, for all of you that love the arts and love Peter Pan, a great musical is coming your way, folks, coming up next weekend at Hoboken High School. Now, the District of Hoboken presents Peter Pan, which is one of Broadway's most timeless musicals. Now, it'll be showing at Friday, May 19th at 7 p.m., Saturday, May 20th at 2 p.m., and Sunday, May the 21st at 2 p.m. at the Auditorium, which is located at 800 Clinton Street in downtown Hoboken. Now, the show is being directed by Danielle Miller, again, the director of the Hoboken High School Drama Club. And, of course, we have some great musical directions by Kristen DeZuba, and the choreography is being done by Brittany Schufer. Now, you can purchase tickets online at hhsnj.booktix.com. Now, tickets for general admission are only $10 for adults, $5 for students, and $5 for seniors. So I urge you, again, if you're looking to see a magnificent version of Peter Pan, I strongly recommend you go to the Auditorium at 800 Clinton Street next week, and again, May 19th at 7 p.m., Saturday the 20th at 2 p.m., and the 21st of May, Sunday, at 2 p.m. It's a great production of Peter Pan brought to you by the Hoboken High School Drama Club. So shout out to all the great students working on this production, all the great kids involved, everyone working on the set. All again, a shout out to them. And folks, again, I can't say enough, a shout out to every single teacher working hard each and every day, because you know what, you make it happen. And we don't do this for money. We don't do this for money. You know, we do it because we love it. We do it because, you know what, it matters to us. It really, really does. It matters. And let me tell you, right now I'm in the middle of grading final exams as a professor. But you know what? It's no different than teachers having to submit grades and submit lesson plans. It's something that is incredibly laborious, but it's rewarding at the same time. So again, a shout out to all the great teachers this week during Teacher Appreciation Week, courtesy of your favorite professor here on Talk on the Hudson. All right, folks, sort of moving on here, another topic here. We'll be getting Bill Matsakoutis on at the bottom of the hour, again at 9:30, so stay tuned. We'll have him on shortly. But I do want to cover a story that was discussed last week here on Talk on the Hudson, and something that really resonated with me. And, of course, as you know, that the Bayonne Board of Education was due to lay off over 261 employees by the end of this full year. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, great story, courtesy of Hudson County View. You can check them out at hudsoncountyview.com. And my buddy, John Hyatt, is a very, very accomplished journalist here in Hudson County. And sort of a follow-up here to what's been going on. We saw that apparently lost in the shuffle of a protest and perhaps another chaotic Bayonne Board of Education meeting this week. The State Department of Education in Trenton confirmed that a financial monitor will be appointed to the District of Bayonne in the coming weeks and explains what the goals will be. Now, one of the main goals of the state monitor is to develop a corrective action plan, because in this case, regarding what's going on in Bayonne, there's at least a $6 million budget deficit that's led to nearly 300 teachers being laid off. And, of course, 88 were rehired earlier this week, according to one of the statutes. Now, the monitor is also expected to be a watchdog that oversees any and all budgetary matters, including budget relocations and also budget reductions. Also, the approval of the purchase orders, payments of bills and claims, and oversee all district staffing. Now, in a sense, the state-appointed official is the most powerful official in the school district, given that he or she's going to have the ability to override a decision by the superintendent or a vote by the Board of Education on any of the aforementioned subjects, as well as many others. Again, Trenton has made it very clear that the monitor is also going to attend all board meetings and meet with trustees on a quarterly basis to discuss past actions, which led to their appointment in the first place. Now, a spokesman for the State Department of Education in Trenton had very few details at the moment to discuss with the general public, but confirmed that a monitor would indeed be appointed to the city of Bayonne. Quote, an email being sent here, I believe, by a spokesman from the Department of Education went on to say, quote, I can confirm that the New Jersey Department of Education plans to appoint a state monitor in the Bayonne School District in the coming weeks, and they'll provide more information when it is indeed finalized. Now, locally, State Senator Senator Cunningham and Assemblyman Nick Cherilotti, which are both from the 31st Legislative District in Hudson County, which covers Bayonne and the south side of Jersey City, praised the decision by the Department of Education in Trenton to utilize a state financial monitor. Now, in the midst of all of this chaos, apparently a state audit of the Bayonne Board of Education will also be conducted, though the results of this are not expected until students and teachers return for the new school year. Now, listen, I'm going to be very honest with you. I was outraged when I read about this. You know, teachers in Bayonne don't deserve this. Teachers anywhere don't deserve this. And when you see, you know, a budget deficit of $6 million, I mean, it's outrageous. And, you know, it boggles my mind that people can be that irresponsible. And I know I talked about last week that Mayor Jane Davis was also looking and sort of seeking an audience with the prosecutor's office to see if maybe some criminal charges can be brought up on this, because you know what? I think this is criminal. Now, again, I'm not an attorney. I don't have a law degree. I mean, I'm an academic as a PhD, but I can tell you from what I'm reading, this is reprehensible. And it's insane when I think about it, you know, what's going on in Bayonne. I mean, this just seems like a systemic, you know, pattern of just incompetence, and a systemic pattern of, you know, what's going on here? You know, and I know some teachers from Bayonne, and it's It's really a travesty because they work hard for their students. And let me tell you, I mean, my God, like, what could they possibly be thinking of here? You know, by being this irresponsible and this reckless with the students of the city of Bayonne. And you know what? I applaud those students last week that walked out onto the streets of Broadway and also, I believe, Avenue, I think it was either Avenue B or C in Bayonne by where the high school is located. And they were out in the streets marching peacefully, thankfully, you know, and there was nobody got hurt. There was no violence. There was no destruction of public property or anything. But my God, like that, you know what? Kudos to them, to those students standing up for that and standing up for their teachers. Who, you know, quite frankly, probably couldn't go out there and make a demonstration. Yeah. I mean, I saw some videos online, people that were checking in on Facebook Live on their smartphones and seeing teachers demonstrate. Good for them, you know. They deserve that because, you know, the Bayonne Board of Education has acted so recklessly. It's unbelievable. It drives me up the wall that I see that. And, you know, it's just one of those things. That even though I'm not teaching at high school level or the elementary level, I mean, I watched these developments over the last few weeks, and unfortunately, like anything else that involves a bureaucracy like the Department of Education in Trenton, this is going to take some time. This isn't an audit that's done in a few days. And I know, as much as we, you know, we live in this sort of instant gratification society and we need, you know, results now, the reality is that we're not going to get them. We're already in mid-May. We have Memorial Weekend coming up, and pretty much the school year is just about to close. And we have about maybe a little until the end of the school year, not just in the city of Bayonne, but throughout other districts in Hudson County. So, I mean, this is going to be a frustrating process. And I can assure everyone that it's going to be a very frustrating summer for parents, for some teachers that are going to be in limbo. They don't know what's going on. And you know, that's great that some teachers were rehired. I know that apparently the city had indicated that raising some property taxes will help create the necessary revenue that would be able to help retain some of these teachers. We're a big budget deficit here, and it's acceptable. And it's something that, you know, quite frankly, I talked about it last week, and I'll say it. But let me tell you, I'm a taxpayer in Hudson County. I'm a taxpayer that, quite frankly, and, you know, thankfully, here in the city, that doesn't happen. I know that our mayor here in the district, works hard to make sure that our schools are funded. But that sort of competence and that sort of leadership doesn't happen in every town. Now, again, I applaud Mayor Jimmy Davis and Bayonne for Board of Education the task. I applaud him, and council members for really, you know, holding the Bayonne Board of Education to task here. And listen, they're not throwing them under the bus. They're really trying to, like, expose them for the incompetence that we've been seeing. These kids don't deserve it. And when we see school districts not being funded, when we see school districts, you know, and teachers who are working hard and become casualties, it's really frustrating. And it's something to me that, quite frankly, is it's really demoralizing. And I feel for my students, you know, who have either family members that work in the city of Bayonne or friends of mine or acquaintances that work in the city of Bayonne and they have to endure this. It's just, it breaks my heart. And I'm not trying to sound, you know, overly sad here. That's not what I like to do on this show. But when I've been reading about this and I read about just school districts not getting their raises and the increments that they deserve on their contracts, it's really frustrating. And I know that this year, and you know, we're going to be talking more about education as the year goes on, especially here with the gubernatorial election being in the headlines and with exactly both candidates will be proposing in terms of their formulas to fund our schools to make sure that the districts are receiving the necessary funding that should be across all one of the some of the challenges that we have when it pertains to looking at education, but nationwide. And that's always a huge, huge dilemma. And again, it's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, let me tell you, it's just interesting that it's, you know, I sit here as not just a homeowner, but a taxpayer, but as commentator, as a citizen who's concerned about education. Someone who teaches, again, in higher ed and is a proud educator, when I see this going on, it's different than when schools aren't funded. And we're talking about either colleges and universities, even our community colleges aren't well funded. And a lot of us, you know, again, aren't being compensated the way we should be. And our contracts aren't being honored. And the state isn't honoring them. And that's always a challenge. And that's something that really, really frustrates me, because I sit here, again, folks, not just as your host tonight and each and every Wednesday night here on blogtalkradio.com/talkonthehudson. It's really something that demoralizing, and I feel for the employees in the city of Bayonne that are going through this, especially a lot of the hardworking teachers that have to try to make ends meet now if they know they're being laid off, and they now it's, you know, the sort of the grueling task of having to look for another job possibly because they don't know what to expect. It's crazy. It's crazy, and we're going to find out what happens coming up in the weeks and months ahead in the city of Bayonne. And I'll keep you posted here on Talking the Hudson. And right now, folks, it's my pleasure at this time to introduce tonight's guest here on Talking the Hudson, Jersey City mayoral candidate and hopeful, Mr. Bill Asikoudis. Bill, how are you, sir?
Very well. Thank you for having me on the podcast, and thank you for doing this podcast. I think it's a great service to the community to have someone like you out there shining the light on Hudson County government and politics, just listening to your discussion regarding Bayonne. And in light of a world with declining newspapers and newspaper readership, we need alternative media outlets that cover these important issues like yourself. So thanks.
Bill, my goodness, that was great, man. You know, I should have recorded that, man. I need this up on my wall. Oh my God,
I don't mean to soften you up to give me softballs for the interview. You know, come at me, but
No, I'm not Chris Matthews. You must have me confused with that guy. No, those softballs here. But Bill, thanks for coming on the show tonight, and I want to give you a platform this evening because, as many of our listeners know, especially my listeners in Jersey City, this November. There will be an election for mayor, as well as city council seats. You have been a big voice in the community, leading the charge to unseat the incumbent, Stephen Fulop, and looking to take over the office on Grove Street, you know, once 2018 comes about. But before that is a grueling campaign. And listen, we all know what's going on in Jersey City. We see that many of the blocks and neighborhoods throughout the city are in decline. We keep reading about gun violence. We keep reading about overdevelopment in the city. And, we'll tackle each issue here tonight. But I wanted to let our listeners tonight hear from you, the candidate. What does Bill Matsikoudis, what does Jersey City mean to him? And what's he looking to do to better Jersey City?
Jersey City means to me my home, place I love, an interesting, diverse city, diverse in its demographics and its ethnic makeup, but also in its architecture and all the different sections of the city. You know, now as I'm campaigning, my travels will take me from the Bayonne border on City Line to Bergen Lafayette to, you know, throughout Greenville, downtown, the Heights, and it's great how all these neighborhoods have their distinct flair. And I have so many great memories throughout my life of Jersey City. So to me, it's a special place. People ask me why I'm running, and the first reason I give is I have deep ties and a deep love for Jersey City. I almost have this sort of irrational love affair with it. So I will try to do the best job to make this a great city that I think it can become as mayor. And Jersey City has seen a lot of positive developments over the last 20 years. We've seen, you know, development going on primarily downtown, but there are still very, very serious problems confronting our city. And indeed, that very development that has brought some positives in the form of new residents that help restaurants thrive, in the form of revenue that has helped the budget sustain itself, and in the form of different job opportunities. But that very same development also is a double-edged sword and creates problems, namely in the form of the rising cost of living, especially with regard to housing. And we are confronting a situation, many people refer to this phenomenon as gentrification, but right now we are creating a very, very real phenomenon that people who have lived here throughout their lives, sometimes for generations, cannot afford to live here anymore. And they're trying to find cheaper places to live, literally having to move out of their dwellings, and sometimes they're being forced straight out of Jersey City. And what I want to do as mayor is address all the problems that are confronting us in a very non-political, common sense way, and that's to address the public safety issues you alluded to make the city safer, and we'll hopefully get into that a little bit because I've issued some pretty detailed policy on that. We want to make it affordable. We want to welcome sensible, smart development and start incentivizing as job-creating development instead of just luxury one-bedroom apartments. And also make the city, you know, beautiful and enhance our already very good park system, which I believe has the potential to be a globally elite park system. So I'll stop and let you ask some more questions before I speak to the whole half hour.
No, listen, Bill, I'm glad you shared something. And I do want to dissect this, you know, little by little here, as, you know, you touched upon a lot of good points. Let me start off with the development because I'm a lifelong Hudson County resident. As I was about to ask you as well, you know, briefly in a bio for you, but I'm a lifelong Hudson County resident. I have seen what not just North Hudson, but Hoboken and Jersey City have undergone in the last 10, 20 years when it comes to development, when it comes to, again, as you mentioned, gentrification. And listen, it's become a great alternative for people who live across the river to come live in Jersey. And that's what a lot of the downtown has become. That's what a lot of the heights have become. But, you know, my concern, Bill, and again, as you know, as mayor, I'm sure many of the listeners listening tonight here is, you know, Jersey City and the cost of living in Hudson County's largest city is skyrocketing to the point where it's out of control. And now it's forcing a lot of people who are lifelong residents out of here, and that's tragic. But what can you say to them tonight who are listening? Because as we know, the cost of living is going up. Everything else is going up. Listen, living so close to New York City, it's inevitable. But Jersey City has really experienced this in very high droves in recent years, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons for it. New York City wasn't always thriving itself, but the fact that it is thriving has definitely had an impact on us, and it's a chain effect, essentially. Brooklyn was a borough that had, you know, shares many cultural similarities to Hudson County, even the accent, the old traditional accent that I used to have myself, that I've, you know, lost over the years, partially from living outside of Jersey City, partially from education maybe. But for me, you know, water was always water, and my mother was always mother. But, you know, that culture over there is similar to here. It was an industrial place, just like Jersey City and Hoboken was. And then it went through periods of decline, so-called white flight occurred, demographics changed, and now Brooklyn and Jersey City and Hoboken have this resurgence going on, partially or largely, I would say, because there's been a shift in the mentality of Americans that people want to live in cities now, especially younger people, people in their 20s and 30s. It's not cool anymore to live in a suburb necessarily and commute an hour each way to work. People don't want to spend a good portion of their lives in cars. People want to be able to walk to the store, to walk to a restaurant, to walk to a bar. And they recognize the benefits of urban living. So this has, you know, now made people want to live in cities again, and it's raised the cost of living. And like you said, the pricing is out of control. So, look, I welcome new people coming in. I think they've been a great benefit to the city, and I love a lot of the amenities that have come with it. And when you have people of means living in a city, I think overall it's a good thing as long as they don't come over and take over the city. Having people of means in a city helps retail thrive. It also helps bring revenue to the city treasury. But you have to put some controls in, especially in a place where you have a thriving sort of real estate market, because the alternative is everyone's going to be forced out of the city. So every city you look around, even globally, like in Hong Kong, which has some of the most expensive real estate in the world, and I've been there, you know, out of 8 million people, 2 million live in some sort of a subsidized housing. So for the first thing we need to do is really take some multifaceted steps toward making Jersey City more affordable. And you know, I could drill down on that a little bit here right now. We're going to be coming out with a white paper on affordability in the coming weeks. We're working, you know, on that now and have been working on, and it's something I've had some experience on throughout my career. But let me just start out by saying I went to a presentation by the mayor and his administration regarding affordable housing the other day. And what struck me was that it was very superficial. It was more of a campaign pitch that was not based in fact. He has repeated some sort of a lie, at least it's not a representation of truth, that there's been more affordable housing created in the last 3 years than in the last 10. It's completely false. And they talk about this affordable housing navigator online, which a lot of people don't even have online access to, that would supposedly direct people to affordable housing. The fact of the matter is that right now it's very difficult for people to get assistance who want to find affordable housing. There is, as far as public housing goes, they're not even accepting applications either for Section 8 vouchers or for the public housing in Jersey City. And there's really no talk about how we're going to generate more. There's been, you know, some discussion about adding more mandated on-site affordable housing. I think there's going to be some sort of an ordinance coming that would also provide preferential treatment to Jersey City residents. I've heard something about it. I haven't seen it. You know, our plan is going to do a few different things. I would say the highlights of it are in proven market areas where there is a demonstrated thriving real estate market. For new development, will require a combination of on-site affordable housing and to the ability for developers to buy out of that by putting money into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. We are going to revise our rent control laws to expand them, to reach out to many different residents right now that have no protection of rent control, which to me is arguably the most important step we could take. And then lastly, I want to create an Office of Affordable Housing in Jersey City so that residents can get assistance and guided through the very difficult process of trying to find some sort of affordable housing. And affordable housing can mean a variety of different things. It can mean everything from public housing, in my opinion, to rent-controlled housing, something where there is an effort by government to make the housing affordable.
Well, Bill, it's interesting you mentioned that. And, you know, sort of moving forward, we know that running for office is laborious, it's grueling, it's expensive. You have certainly got out there early. You've been hitting the streets early. I've been watching your campaign for a while. Listen, to the best of my knowledge, from people I talk to online and people on the streets, people my sources talk to me often, you've been really resonating with a lot with so many residents you've come into contact with when you go into neighborhoods. What right now, you know, could you tell us that makes you a better choice than Stephen Fulham?
Well, one of the reasons I'm running is because I'm very dissatisfied with the way Stephen Fulham has been running the city. He's been very good at managing his political career, but not good at managing the city. And he operates City Hall more like a political operation than a governmental operation. And there's a cost to that mentality. You could start out with the fact that arguably the most important thing a mayor can do is appoint the best and the brightest quality people to help run the city. For example, in the cabinet or as directors, that's what Michael Bloomberg said is the most important thing that either a CEO or a mayor can do. And he appointed political hacks by and large, and he had to fire or force the resignation of multiple, over six of them, many of whom in the first couple of years of his administration. And there are real consequences to that. For example, he fired his chief of police in the first year. But the consequences to that we feel every single day. We can see it in the fact that there's been a higher homicide rate every single year that Steve Fulop has been mayor than in the years before him. You talked about the fact that it's hard to open up the Jersey Journal and not read about someone who wasn't shot and killed it seems to be a weekly or biweekly occurrence. And that's a great failure by this administration. We move on to the broken promises of Stephen Fulop. It seems that Councilman Fulop is a completely distinct and different person than Mayor Fulop. Whether it's requiring directors to live in Jersey City as he promised to do, yet he becomes mayor and his two most important positions, the business administrator, the chief of police, non-residents. He was the most anti-tax abatement councilman ever in the history of Jersey City. As mayor, he's given out 70 so far. His signature issue as a so-called reformer was pay to play as a mayor, and then in his brief term as a unannounced but active gubernatorial candidate, he solicited millions, let me repeat, millions of dollars from people or entities that do business with the city, including $1 million contribution that they tried to hide through a dark money contribution through a 501c4 that was created on one day and then gave $1 million to Steve Fulop Super PAC the very next day underneath a fake name. But thanks to harassment by myself and many activists, that name was exposed. It was none other than the owner of Christ Hospital, CarePoint Health, known to charge the most outrageous, outlandish medical bills in the United States of America, as documented by the New York Times. The very entity that Steve Fulop tried to direct the emergency services contract to, away from the not-profit medical center that's had that contract for over 100 years since they were leading ambulances with horses. And we can go on and on about the ethical lapses of Steve Fulop, except I think I'd have to stop to shave. I mean, we could talk even today. It was reported in Bloomberg News. It was reported in Bloomberg News today how he was geared up to give 100 acres of city property or combined ownership between the city and Honeywell on the west side of Jersey City to none other than Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of Donald Trump. You know, Steve Fulop is great with creating mirages and political smoke screens. He wants to stand up now and look like he's anti-Trump, but the fact of the matter is he's been in bed with the Kushner family for a long time and soliciting and obtaining contributions from them. Again, another hidden contribution that was revealed by the media, a $100,000 contribution from the Kushner companies to a 501c4 that then turned over $400,000 to Steve Fulop Super PAC. And you could look at, you know, different companies that also gave to his 2013 mayoral campaign that have gotten business from the city or its autonomous agencies. All of these things have been documented in the media. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is this is a guy who promised transparency, but it's the least transparent government that I think exists in the state of New Jersey, and which is why we had to even take him to court on a couple different occasions and successfully underneath open public records lawsuit. So, in summary, this is a guy who's dominated by politics, not about doing the right thing, and the consequences of it we can see. He neglected the city for 3 years while he was running for governor, and I'll make Jersey City better, whether it's public safety, keeping our streets clean, or making life more affordable.
Well, you know, Bill, I'm glad you sort of brought that up because I discussed this last week when I talked about the donation, the contribution that State Senate President Steve Sweeney gave your campaign last year. And I talked openly on the air, and I know we talked about this off the air as well. You know, the word transparency means a lot to me when it comes to public officials. And, you know, one of the things that has not sat well with me with the mayor has been the fact that, listen, you know, I think I told you the story off the air. You know, back in the summer of 2012, nobody was giving any press locally when he was then candidate Fulop. And, you know, sure enough, it wasn't the Jersey Journal. It wasn't the Hudson Reporter. It wasn't any other sort of local blogger. It was me. It was me along with Hudson County TV who was giving him any press he could. And, you know, as he was out campaigning at events, I would go to events, I'd interview him, I did tons of segments with him. And one of the things that really has not sat well with me since then, and I don't want to sound salty because it might come off that way to some people, but, you know, I take guys at their word. You know, you know, guy to guy, you know, you shake my hand, you tell me, Fernando, I'm going to do this. You know, I'm going to take it your word, and I'm going to hope that, you know, you go through with it. And I remember that going into the spring of 2013, you know, he was a dark horse candidate. He was fighting the system. He was fighting the machine. It looked like Jerry Healy was going to squeak out a win again. And you know what? When he won in convincing fashion and his counsel slate got on as well, for the most part, I remember seeing Steve that night at the Beer Garden, shaking his hand. He said, Fernando, I appreciate all the coverage you gave me. I won't forget you, and we'll do those segments you want to do in my office. We'll do them periodically, a couple times a month. We'll sit in my office. We'll give the residents of Jersey City, you know, an accurate depiction of what's going on. We'll do a State of the City address in my office. I'll answer any question you have. You know what, Bill, to his credit, in the first few months of his administration, he was doing that. And slowly but surely, whether he already started eyeing the governor's seat in Trenton or were the wrong people whispering in his ear, he became very non-existent. And he went from meeting with me twice a month to once a month to not returning calls to me having to go through three people to schedule an interview, which is then 5 minutes. Then I had to send an email with questions ahead of time. You know, it looked like the guy got a little too big for his bridges. And no offense to anyone listening tonight, when I heard that he had to step down from running for governor because apparently there was some things that were leaking out or some shady news out there that maybe could come out and could really hurt his chances, and he pulled out of the race and he ended up, you know, endorsing Phil Murphy. I can tell you right now, Bill, the happiest person in Hudson County was yours truly, because it couldn't have happened to a better person. After everything that we heard from the summer of 2012 into the spring of 2013 about Councilman Phillip and what he was going to be, he was not going to be like the machine. He was going to beat the machine and change Hudson County politics. Well, the problem is, and I've reached out to Steve's office, and they haven't gotten back to me, and I looked at, I'd like to have the mayor on the show. We'll see if that happens. But transparency is not a word I would use with Mayor Phillip. And I'm glad you brought that up, though. And at least, you know, I have you on the record now. Can we at least come to some sort of agreement, Bill, that, you know, once you're elected in November, can you make it a point to come back on the podcast on a regular basis? Can you do that for your Jersey City residents?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do it.
Okay.
I'm enjoying the conversation so far, especially the last couple minutes of your talk. But no, absolutely. What I said at the outset of the interview, I really mean. One thing I've come to learn, I really came to learn this when I was serving as the city attorney, the corporation counsel for Jersey City. And I remember I was working on something, and it dealt with finding the former owners of the hotel in the square. That property has been the focus of global news lately because now Jared Kushner is looking to build on it. But we were going after, at the time, the former owners, the Tawils, that had some ramshackle buildings on there. We had fined them, and I remember being covered by the Jersey Journal, and they wanted to know what was going to happen with the fines. Were we ever going to be able to collect them? Were we ever going to be able to get these owners of the property that were doing nothing with it out so that some real development could happen? And I remember, frankly, that the newspaper reporters were creating some level of anxiety, if you will, and worry on my part, and I was complaining about them. And ultimately, we did a good job. We collected the largest fine in the history of Jersey City. We got these terrible landlords and landowners out of Jersey City, got the old decrepit buildings torn down and set the stage for development. And I remember reflecting and looking back going, you know what? I did a better job because the newspaper was holding me accountable. I couldn't have, I wasn't sure that I would have done, had performed to the same level had it not been for the fact that my feet was being kept to the fire by the newspaper. So I like the fact that newspaper journalists and now people who have podcasts and blogs are going to be there to shine the light, to keep public officials accountable, whether it's at the national or the local level. So that's a long way to say, yes, I'll be on your podcast again. And after I'm mayor, absolutely, we'll do it regularly. It's fun for me, too.
Oh, I appreciate that, Bill. So let's get back to the campaign. Let's get back to some issues I know residents want to hear about tonight. And, you know, we talked about overdevelopment. What about school funding? I know that the Jersey City Board of Education has been a point of contention for some time and certainly has been in the news. What's the best way under your administration that residents can look forward to in terms of how will education improve for the students of Jersey City?
Well, first we have to start out with the fact that basically the mayor has limited control over schools in the state of New Jersey. The power is vested in the school board, and in Jersey City and in other cities, a lot of that power is still vested in the state, but basically Jersey City now is controlled. There's the superintendent of the schools, Marsha Lyles. Having said that, I would look to have a very, very aggressive role in the schools by using the political power of the mayor's office, but in a positive way, not to dictate who gets hired, like some other mayors have done, and make it a patronage mill by exerting pressure on board members on what professional services contracts to give out, as has been done by FullUp, but to try to come up with constructive ways to join forces to both lobby Trenton for help and also to come up with creative collaboration between city government and the school board to provide for better opportunities for our students, like, for example, having a direct line from school to employment or internship opportunities. You know, the mayor may enjoy better relationships and more of clout, if you will, with some of the corporate residents of the city, and therefore can combine efforts with principals to line up juniors and seniors in high school with great internship opportunities. But when it comes to funding, I think that's the most important place where the mayor can play a role. And that would be by changing the way Jersey City does business to ensure that any revenue from tax abatements or payments in lieu of taxes, pilots, goes to the school in the same percentage that conventional property taxes go to schools, the 40%. And previously, Jersey City was sending nothing. And Councilman Phillip, another broken promise, promised that he would begin immediately upon becoming mayor to dedicate those funds to schools, and he broke that promise. I wrote an op-ed on this 6 months ago. Subsequently, Phillip has come out with an executive order after being pressured, saying he would send 10% to the schools of the pilot revenue. That's still way too little. So that's one thing that I would do. I would pass an ordinance to get it done, and frankly, I would work with the state legislative representatives from Hudson County to make it a state law.
Now, Bill, you're running as a Democrat, correct?
Well, no, because you can't run as a Democrat. So even though Phillip and I are Democrats, neither of us will, I guess, be officially running as Democrats because it's a nonpartisan election. So there's no primary.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay.
And just like it is in Newark and in Hoboken and in Bayonne, I believe, yes, there is no primary. You don't run as a party member. Now, having said that, I am absolutely a Democrat. I was a delegate for Barack Obama. So neither one of us will be running officially as Democrats. I suspect we'll both be telling people the fact that we are Democrats. And I would argue that I'm more of a Democrat than Steve Phillip, but I could tell you why if you want to know.
No, I'll get to that in a minute. But the reason I bring that up is, you know, we've been living in a certain type of political climate for some time now where, you know, party politics tend to sort of dominate the rhetoric, and we tend to, you know, the first thing we do is look at the letter next to a person's name, and we make preconceived notions. One of the things, for example, I wanted to bring this up to your attention because I want to see how you felt. With the new administration in Washington, and obviously the rhetoric again for many, many months now, talking about an issue like immigration. You know, we talk about Hudson County being as densely populated as it is. We know that the term sanctuary cities has been in the news and in the news cycle for some time. We know that Stephen Phillip went on record and, along with the city council, passed an ordinance to declare Jersey City a sanctuary city. Now you're a proud Democrat, so this is probably going to be one of the tougher questions. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire tonight. You know, for a lot of residents listening tonight, Bill, you know, the term sanctuary city generates a lot of different reactions. And for people who are homeowners and taxpayers, and they look at the rhetoric of, well, you know, our elected officials are going to make my city and my township a sanctuary city. They are here where I live in Union City. My mayor and state senator Brian Stack has gone on record declaring itself a sanctuary city. I know Stephen Phillip, along with the city council, has done the same. He spoke at a rally right on Newark Avenue, right on the intersection of Grove Street, declaring Jersey City a sanctuary city. Is that a practice you agree with? Because, I think a lot of homeowners and residents might say, you know, this may not be in our best interest for Jersey City. You know, what do you say to a resident or a homeowner that tells you that?
Yeah, I have a lot of things to say about it. And I think, again, something similar to what I said before about Steve Phillip doing a good job of smoke and mirrors and doing something more about the politics and less about what really matters. So let me begin by saying I do not believe that local government should be in the practice of apprehending or enforcing immigration laws. It's not something that's within our police powers. It's not something that's within the scope of local government. And I don't think that it's something that we should be doing. I am extraordinarily sensitive and sympathetic and empathetic to immigrants that are here who are undocumented. I have a direct relationship to that. My father was an undocumented immigrant who, in fact, stowed away on a ship from Greece. So he was exactly in the same shoes as so many of our neighbors are. Indeed, he was apprehended and deported from the United States on his first visit, and instead of returning to Greece, whence he came, back in that day, it wasn't an easy trip. He came on a ship. He went to Cuba to live, which I know you are of partial Cuban descent, and he went
to Cuba before
Fidel and was there during the Batista regime, and then ultimately came back to the United States where he was able to start a business here in Jersey City and raise his family. So by my own very background, I have the sympathy for immigrants, and I always did, which is why I was in the immigration law clinic as a Seton Hall law student and worked on political asylum cases. I'm a guy who has worked in restaurants from the age of 15 to like 24, and we worked with so many Central Americans, by and large, helped me learn my Espanol with my friends from Mexico, El Salvador, and other countries in Central America, and I really empathize and sympathize with their plight. I was offended, angered by Donald Trump in his opening announcement to run for mayor when he made those comments about Mexicans that is simply contrary to the data about Mexicans being criminals. It's also not only contrary to the data, but I think it's contrary to like all of our anecdotal experiences in life with Mexicans. So I think that Jersey City should be a sanctuary city in that we should absolutely not be cooperating to expel law-abiding undocumented aliens, and we should be helping them transition into being full-fledged American citizens because they provide a great value to our society. They provide great work, and they're part of our community. Having said that, I don't know if grandstanding
Bill,
on the issue.
Bill, actually, I mean, not to cut you off, and I'm sorry, but let me ask you, you're an attorney, and I'll sort of put this question out there for our listeners tonight who don't have a law degree and maybe aren't familiar with immigration law. Again, what can the federal government do should a state or a city choose not to enforce immigration laws? What jurisdiction
does
Washington have?
Jersey City, it's one thing not to enforce. The city was never doing it anyway. So nor is the state of New Jersey, even under the guidelines set forth by former Attorney General Ann Milgram, and really underneath Chris Christie, and by and large, New Jersey's a sanctuary state. So a lot of this stuff is political rhetoric when it comes down to it, because
sure.
the state of New Jersey,
no,
the state police, they're not. In my opinion, is if you catch somebody who's an undocumented immigrant for a minor offense, which is, you know, certainly not a criminal level, you don't do anything. You catch someone for committing a crime, there's a certain level. But basically, the Attorney General guidelines indicate when you have to report someone to ICE. But the bottom line is, when the Jersey City police arrest someone, they fingerprint them, a lot of those records go anyway. So I wouldn't say not cooperate. And even Steve Phillips' executive order, as I read it, said not to disobey federal law. So there's a lot of, I think, political rhetoric going on as opposed to legal things going on here. And I don't know if it was in the city's best interest to I was frankly ambivalent to get up there and declare we're a sanctuary city. Was that a political statement to assist Steve Phillip, or which could have put, you know, funds for the city in jeopardy, and also maybe draw into question some times when we have to cooperate or should be cooperating with federal immigration officials? I mean, those guys have a tough job too. And, you know, on the other side of the coin, we have to recognize that, hey, are we a country that has borders? Are we a country that has immigration laws that we're supposed to try to abide by? You know, and it's a very difficult, nuanced thing. As someone who's the son of an undocumented immigrant, who people used to call an illegal, you know, alien back in the day, and some people still call it that right on TV, whatever the nomenclature we may use, you know, I think that so many people like myself feel like, well, we have to have some rules and regulations. But on the other hand, these people who are coming here, you know what? They're trying to make a living. They're coming out of sometimes desperate situations. So I'm rooting for them. I'm empathizing with them. So it's a really difficult thing. The real question is, was it right to shine the spotlight on us, to make us potentially a target? And I don't know, because I do see the benefit of telling our not undocumented neighbors, hey, we're with you. Don't be afraid. We're standing up with you. And we could have done that without, you know, being on every TV station, but I don't know.
No, that's fair. It's fair. Now, Bill, you know, I did some homework on your campaign before the show, as a good host would do. And I looked over your website and some really, really great talking points here. I looked at your some of the highlights of your agenda here. One that really caught my eye, I wanted to, you know, talk about it with you on the air tonight, so you know, the residents of Jersey City, your future constituents, can have a better idea. I saw a commitment to community policing that stood out for me. I was a CJ major. One of my graduate degrees is in criminal justice. I worked as a probation officer and also for the public defenders for like 10 years before getting into academia. So I'm very, very well versed on criminal justice and criminal justice practices. But when I saw this, it really caught my eye, though. What can you tell our residents about a commitment to community policing? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's something I issued this white paper on, which we're going to do on a variety of different policy points. And community policing means a variety of things. Sometimes people think of it as, well, we're going to put cops on the beat. And that's part of it. Part of it absolutely means getting cops out of patrol cars and onto the streets so that they can interact with the public. But it really means so much more than that. We want to have a robust interaction, a vigorous dialogue between the police with the residents of Jersey City. And you don't get that in being driving around in a cruiser. But we also want to change the mindset of the police and have a philosophical shift. That starts with a guardian mindset, a personality of amiability, and a mindset of compassion toward the public. We also want the police to adopt a problem-solving mentality, an approach where we try to ascertain where problems occur, what is causing them, and work perhaps with other elements of local government to address those problems before they bubble up into something more problematic. So it requires, you know, not just once in a while a public relations appearance with the public, or once in a blue moon stopping into the community group to tell them how many crimes there's been. And those things are good. It really requires regular, daily, incessant contact with the community. And a different mindset as well. So There are other cities that have adopted community policing fully, and the results have been extraordinarily positive. Right in our own state, we see Camden, which has adopted community policing and has become a talking point for politicians ranging from Barack Obama to Chris Christie, who both went there to praise the chief of police and the new policing strategies that they have implemented in Camden, where it was once one of the homicide capitals of America, has seen its crime rate falling down dramatically. So community policing works, yet this administration has refused to do it. There has been some limited commitment to foot patrols, but even there, the city has refused to adopt it, claiming a shortage of personnel in order to do that. But the real reality is that this administration has engaged, at least at the first few years of its existence, in the discredited police strategy of the past, like a broken windows theory on strategy. Now, I understand broken windows to a certain extent, which is we should not let people get away with violating quality of life crimes. But it's another thing to say you're going to stop crime by going on sweeps and arresting hundreds of people for minor offenses, which is precisely what not only did Mayor Fulop do, but he's bragged about it. In fact, in his 2014 State of the City address, he bragged that he had arrested hundreds in sweeps over the summer that was going to lead to a reduction in crime. But we've seen the reverse be true, that crime has gone up, and sadly, the relationship between the community and the police is at a low. And when we see crimes that occur, and it was written about by two reverends today in an op-ed piece in the Jersey Journal, this administration shamefully casts dispersions on the victims, says that the victims, talks about the victims' crime record, will always talk about how the public is refusing to cooperate, and without taking any of the responsibility for themselves for the failed public safety strategies, for the broken down relationship between the police and the community. But can it be any surprise when you had to fire your chief of police in the first year and you yourself were absent for 3 years running for governor? So there's my response on community policing and, you know, why this administration strategies don't resemble it really in any shape or form.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, you know, again, as someone who, you know, I work in Jersey City while working at the Journal Square area, obviously, at the college at the community college campus. But, you know, I've had the chance to drive to Jersey City through different moments and opportunities. And listen, I don't envy the hardworking men and women of the Jersey City PD. They have a tough job. I mean, there are some neighborhoods and streets in Jersey City on the west side, along Bergen Avenue, in Greenville. I mean, it's a challenge. Certainly, you know, when you're on patrol in downtown by Grove Street, as opposed to walking the beat on Bergen Avenue after midnight, I mean, it's a challenge. And I applaud the hardworking women of Jersey City in the police department who, again, work tireless hours in that city. And let me tell you, it's difficult. And, you know, by what you're telling me, though, in terms of the community policing components, and that's great. At the end of the day, though, do you think that residents can you sell residents on this, though? Because normally that's what it seems to boil down to, right? Can you sell the public on what this strategy means in Jersey City? Can you do that?
Yeah, I think that most residents that I'm talking to agree with it, like it, and want it. And look, let me say this. I concur that the Jersey City Police have a hard job, and I think they, by and large, do a good job. This is something that will benefit the police dramatically, implementing a true community policing mindset, a true community policing philosophy and strategy. Incidentally, my brother was a Jersey City cop for 25 years. And has retired from the force, and I have many, many friends who are cops. When I came up with this strategy, I had input from current leadership in the police department who spoke to me off the record, former leadership of the Jersey City Police Department, rank and file Jersey City cops who read it, vetted it, gave me their feedback, gave me additional items to put in, corrected me when I had some things wrong. So, yeah, if you read my piece, there's a lot of there's some journals and books that are cited too, because, you know, these white papers, when we start doing these things, we find out, hey, you know, there's a lot to look into here. And I spent a lot of time, much more than I had anticipated, reading on the subject. And it's pretty interesting, fascinating stuff. But really talking to the police that do it. And by the way, we went out of Jersey City, too. And you may have seen the Earl Morgan column that talked about it. We invited him in to one of our discussions that we had in my law office on one of those streets that people call a tough neighborhood. My law office on Monticello Avenue in the heart of Bergen Lafayette. And we had the former head of the Philadelphia Police Department talk about his experience with community policing and why it works so well in Philadelphia. So, you know, in my opinion, community policing isn't an option. It's a mandate, especially in light of questionable police shootings post-Ferguson, especially in light of horrific ambushes on police that we've seen in Dallas, in New York City, and other places. We need to do something to ensure that something like that never, ever happens in Jersey City. And beyond that, it's an effective way of fighting crime and of improving the relationships between the police is to break down the barriers between the police and the public. And the police should not be serving those neighborhoods behind tinted glass like an occupying army. They should be out there getting to know the people. And whether that's a reverend, whether that's a store owner, whether that's a school teacher, whether that's the guys on the corner who probably should be somewhere else, those are the people at all points of contact that we need to be engaging with.
Bill, let me ask you a question here. I think this is probably one of the tougher ones tonight. And again, I'm going to have to hold your feet to the fire here. Some residents have come up to me in person, online. Listen, whether or not this is a fair criticism or an accusation, I'm going to let you answer. But, you know, as we're all aware, you worked in the previous administration for some time under former Jerry Healey. And I know Jerry personally. When I was a probation officer and he did a lot of pro bono work, you know, with the public defender's office, you know, I got to know Jerry, a nice guy, a gentleman, always stand up with me, you know, very cordial. Some people might want to say, you know, Bill Matsakoutis, you know, he's the guy that, you know, he's from the Healey days, and maybe he's just a little salty, and, you know, he's just, I don't know, maybe he wants to sort of turn the clock back and to what Jersey City used to be when he was there in that administration. What do you tell those cynics?
Turn the clock back to 3 years ago to when Healey was there. Well, I say this. I love Jerry Healey. I think a lot of good things happened to Jersey City when he was the mayor. You know, I'll point out that in 2012, the lowest homicide rate since records were being kept by the FBI. And every year since Steve Phillips in, the homicide rate has been basically twice that and then some. So there were some good things done by Jerry Healey. I would also argue that I had a lot to do with some of the good things that occurred during the Healey administration. For example, when we took the bold action to sue polluters to compel them to clean up contaminated sites, like the former PPG plant on Garfield Avenue, which will be developed for mixed uses and already is the home of a great park. Or when we sued Honeywell to clean up the property on 440 that's going to lead to a great mixed-use 100-acre development on the west side of the city. When we took on the NRA and passed gun control laws in Jersey City and had the NRA sue us, only to have the fighting it all the way to the Supreme Court. So, look, a lot of good things happened with Jerry Healey. Not for one second would I try to hide the fact that I'm a good friend of his and proudly served in his administration. But I was also, you know, a city attorney who was voted in unanimously on a couple of occasions by the city council, including by Councilman Steve Phillip. And having said all of that, I think anyone who knows me and knows Healey knows that we're distinctly different people. And if I'm lucky enough to become mayor, I hope that I can have the same level of compassion as a Jerry Healy, but I'm going to be doing things in a different way, and he would know that as well because we're different sorts of people. I never had the opportunity to set forth all the policies that I wanted to do, obviously as a city attorney and not as since I was not the mayor, and the policies that I will carry out with the personality that I have is going to be just a different situation than before. I was the city attorney, now I want to be the mayor. And as the mayor, I'm going to be able to do things like the community policing regime I've discussed, like the affordability controls I want to bring about, like the great park system that Jersey City can have that I've written a white paper on. Those are the things I would do as mayor. I think that's quite a bit different than Jerry Healy.
Well, Bill, I appreciate you sort of shedding light on that. A lot of residents have put that to my attention. I wanted to make sure I sort of got you on the record. And I appreciate you providing that clarity. I know you've been on with me for almost about an hour. I know you're a busy guy. Just to close out the segment with you, tell our listeners real quick about your website, where they can donate. And listen, I'd like to have you on again soon because I do want to talk about your council candidates also on your ticket. So I do want to give them also the audience, you know, to at least, you know, learn about them and also more about your ticket. So I hope you want to come back on soon in a few weeks, Bill. Can you do that for us?
Sure. Be happy to do
okay.
it.
Okay, great.
My website is Matts, number four, mayor. So Matts for mayor, M-A-T-S, number four, mayor.com. You can contribute right on there. There's a big contribution button. Get your credit card ready. And we need the funds, that's for sure. Because that's the way we're going to get our message out, is to have the money to prepare the direct mail, get us up on TV this fall as we get closer to the election, so we can tell the people of Jersey City what we're going to do and paint the distinction between myself and my opponent.
Aside from the website, do you have any social media that promotes your campaign as well for our listeners to look into?
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. So,
all right.
Almost all of them. We're gonna. There, I have a Periscope is the only one I don't think we're on yet, so we have to get you up there.
Okay, fair enough. Well, listen, Bill, I appreciate you dedicating a good amount of time tonight to the show. I'm glad we get to talk about a lot concerning Jersey City, and the clarity provided tonight I think was very helpful for our listeners and also for all of the Jersey City residents that tuned in tonight. I'm looking forward to having you back on again soon. I definitely want to hear more about the campaign, but also I want to hear about your council candidates. Because all nine council seats will be up in November, along with the mayor's seat. So a lot to talk about in Jersey City in the weeks and months ahead. So I look forward to having you back on here, okay?
Sounds great.
Bill, again,
thank you so much.
And
keep up the good work.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. But ladies and gentlemen, again, once again, join us tonight here. Bill Matsakoudis, candidate for mayor in Jersey City. I appreciate him dedicating some time tonight on Talking to Hudson. Bill, have a great night, sir. I'll be in touch with you soon.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Have a good night, Bill. Again, folks, there, Bill Matsakoudis, our guest tonight here on Talk of the Hudson, running for mayor in Jersey City. We'll have him back on soon in the next few weeks. Again, we have plenty to talk about concerning his campaign. Also, the council seats that are up for grabs in Jersey City. So we'll be wanting to learn more about the council candidates that will be running with him as the summer progresses coming up and also well into the fall on Election Day this November. And my goodness, folks, if time flies here on Blog Talk Radio, I'll tell you. Again, I want to thank Bill Matsakoudis for being on the show tonight. Again, almost on for an hour. That's amazing. I appreciate Bill's time this evening. And so, again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, do me a favor. Check out www.blogtalkradio.com/talkonthehudson. And don't forget that every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can listen to the best commentary about everything Hudson County right here on Blog Talk Radio. And again, don't forget, again, if you missed any part of it, you can always check it out from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And you can tune into Talking to Hudson anywhere, whether it's you're walking your dog in these nice days ahead of us, whether you're studying for final exams, going to do your laundry, going for a run. Hey, whatever you're doing, if you have any of those devices on you, again, I appreciate you tuning in to Talking to Hudson. And if you have any topic or issue you want to hear about next week, please write to the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, which is talkingtohudson@gmail.com. Again, don't forget to like Talking to Hudson on Facebook. And also make sure that you follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Again, on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando and on Twitter at TheGloriousUJ. And again, once Talking to Hudson is brought to you by Alavella Restaurant, folks. It's a brand new gem in Hudson County, and it's indeed the best Italian food you will taste anywhere here in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. Now, Alavella is located at 7709 Bergenline Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. They're open for dinner 7 days a week. They have a great outdoor seating area now with the warm days ahead of us, so you definitely want to check it out. Don't forget to call them and make a reservation, 201-662-6110. Once again, reservation hotline at Alavella, 201-662-6110. Check out their website, www.olivellanj.com. You can check out their full menu there. Great pictures describing every dish and how well they are all prepared. Don't forget to like Olivella Restaurant on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. If it's unbiased and unfiltered, you know it. Every Wednesday night, live on Blog Talk Radio at 9 p.m., it's Talk on the Hudson. Good night, Washington Street, from 14th Street down to 1st, in the Mile Square City of Hoboken. And don't forget, everyone, let's keep on talking.
Held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. If you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse.